Hello, everyone. Welcome back to I See What You're Saying, the Disciplined Listening Podcast. I'm Michael Reddington, and today it is my pleasure to welcome our next guest, Jason Wasser. And to put it mildly, when we say Jason is a man who wears many hats, he is a licensed family and marriage therapist. He's a sports performance consultant. He's a business coach. He's a neuro-emotional technique practitioner. And he's a podcast host, among many other things. In fact, he had me on his podcast and we enjoyed the conversation so much. We wanted to keep it going. So here we are. He's joined our show today so we can continue to talk about his experience, the lessons he's learned through his conversations and how we can apply it to our conversations. And really for me, I was super curious to continue our conversations from his podcast and really focus on the through threads. When you think about marriage therapy and sports performance and business coaching, these all might seem like they're separate things, but there are through threads. There's consistent topics that go through all of these conversations that allows him to focus and not just be successful in his job, but help his clients be so successful in their lives and their jobs as well. So just to scratch the surface on this conversation, we're going to talk about overcoming self-limitations, applying systems theory. We're going to get into his focus on simplicity, probability, and leverage, and so much more. It's a fun conversation. I'm really excited to share it with you all today. Thank you for being here. And while you're here, please just take a second. Like the show, subscribe to the show, share the show, leave us a rating, give us your feedback. We would love to hear from you. Thank you. And also, when you have a moment, check out our sponsors. Head over to humantel.com and enter the code INQUASIVE25 to get 25% off their best-in-class online training as you develop the skill set necessary to recognize what people are likely thinking and feeling by identifying shifts in their emotions through changes in their facial expressions and nonverbal communication. For the professional interviewers, head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can learn everything you need to about the International Association of Interviewers, both what you will get from the association and what you can give to the association. That's also where you can learn all you need to know about the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. And while you're online, please head over to inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs our clients ask us to customize for their senior leaders, sales teams, negotiators, HR teams, and more, to teach them how to apply the strategic observation and persuasive communication techniques necessary to uncover the everyday confessions hiding in all of our high-impact conversations. We really appreciate you being here for another show. Thank you very much. So now, without further ado, I introduce to you Jason Wasser. Jason, it's so great to see you, man. How are you?
I am great. It's so great to see you. And I know that we're now returning the favor that, you know, we had you on my podcast a little bit ago. So I want to give a shout out for that, for your listeners to go hear you as a guest. But I really am excited to hang out with you and your community today.
Well, I appreciate it. And I want to give you the shout out to have people go listen to you as a host on your show, because we just recorded that a couple of weeks ago. This is a pretty quick turnaround within a month or so. So I really enjoyed being on your show. I enjoyed the conversation and I was thankful that we were able to get this set up and return the favor, flip the coin, whatever. What do they say? Oh, how the tables turn, something like that. But here we are. So for me, I found so many things interesting about you and your insights and your perspective when we were having our conversation. And for this show, one of the things I try to do, and listeners can tell me if I actually do it or not, is find cool people with cool perspectives on communication and relationships and achievement and all of these stuff. But it's, I guess the nucleus is all about communication and how do we become better and not just talking to others, but experiencing others and listening and achieving and all those things that I already said. So one of the things that I found fascinating in our conversation was you're a marriage and family therapist, but you're also a business coach and you're also into sports psychology and you do so many different things that for me, I had to take a step back and say, all right, there's got to be a through thread somewhere. I think you do addiction counseling too, right? So we'll just keep piling this on. There's got to be a through thread somewhere that pulls this all together for you. So to maybe use the longest question set up in the history of time, what is the through thread that you find that helps you connect with so many people in so many seemingly different contexts?
Yeah, what a great question. And it's funny because that's something that I a few years ago had to explain, because, you know, when you do see this and you see someone who's like, wow, this person has way too many specialties, how could they be good at anything? For me, there's a difference between a philosophy and approach and sub-communities, sub-categories, and the tools that I use in order to help them. So, you know, I'm a licensed marriage and family therapist by graduate school training and licensure and so forth. And everything else that has kind of been stacked upon that came out of a decision to not go back to get my doctorate. And instead to, you know, I decided that I'm just going to be as up to date as possible with any clinical area that I'm excited about, that I would enjoy doing, and spending whatever time I want in that community to learn what I need to learn. And then specifically focus on how will that help me with everything else I'm doing in my practice. So to split up the first part, right, I started off with hypnosis and certified addiction professional, you know, as far as certification, which really was about triggers, traumas, things that are leaving your nervous system being hijacked. So one of the outcomes of that would be craving, substances, food, and so forth. But that still goes back to trauma. The same thing with sports psychology. I grew up an athlete. I'm 5'2". I'm much bigger on Zoom than I am in person, but I grew up playing tennis and baseball and, you know, all those things. And, you know, the self-limitations are still part of that belief, but I also had trauma from playing sports, right? I got made fun of. I got, dismissed just by judgment of my height as opposed to my actual performance level, which was actually quite well. So I see the underlying connection between a lot of these things of self-limiting beliefs as well as trauma. And so there's those like sub little communities of that connects it, but also a lot of times it's tools, right? So hypnosis is a tool. My integrative medicine side, which is really the larger approach using a modality called neuro-emotional technique, which we can get into a little bit later. But then really at the all of it is this entrepreneur mindset, which I struggled with. I came from this perspective of the have-nots, the scholarship kid, and going into business, going into my own practice, I saw how that limited me from my own success. So if I didn't unpackage all of that, how am I going to be amazing for my clients, right? Then how am I going to be amazing? So it came hand in hand with that, that as I went further into this entrepreneurial journey, I didn't realize that it was not just about making more money and doing more good, but it was also about cleaning up my own psychological beliefs. So in a nutshell, that's kind of how it all works together. But now this whole entrepreneurship mindset kind of goes into this therapeutic realm as well.
Well, I appreciate you walking us through all that. Now I only have like 99 questions that I have to remember to ask as we follow up and go through. So one is just a clarification question, and then I'll fall back to the next one while I still remember it. Did I hear you say that there's a difference between philosophy and approach, meaning like those two words mean different things to you?
Yeah. In my practice specifically, right, marriage and family therapy, which I want to, maybe this is a great, you know, way to share this. Marriage and family therapy is a misnomer when it comes to certain states in America that have that license, as if we only do marriages or families. We are actually systemically trained, relational dynamics trained. Now, when you think about it, like what's the most common relational dynamics, marriages and families, versus like going to individual therapy and, you know, traditional psychology. So the marriage and family therapy world didn't necessarily arrive as a breakaway from psychology and Freud and all that other stuff. It actually came up through systems theory and relational dynamics of how do things work as they interact with things going on inside and outside of them. So it could be you, the business owner, or you, right? All the parts of yourself, right? You the family member, you the friend, you the boss, you the pet owner, right? You the whatever it might be, and your beliefs, assumptions, and expectations about that. So again, philosophy would be, what are your beliefs? What are your cultural beliefs? What are your gender beliefs? Things that you've inherited that may not be authentically yours, or things that you picked up along the way from the time you were born till now that we get to sift and sort through to say, is this healthy for you? Are these beliefs authentic to you? And then how does that play out in your relationships, both internally and externally?
Cool. Thank you. So when you talked about the therapist or the therapy training and that work, and then you talked about the entrepreneurial mindset. So for me, I feel like, and as I take everybody into the deep, dark recesses of how I process things, right? I feel like I can look at somebody with a therapist background and the understanding of how our minds work, how our brains work, how our emotions work, and how that can help with the entrepreneurial mindset. Because if I'm more intrinsic, if I'm more introspective, I can understand what's really happening inside me, maybe even inside my coworkers, and that can help me be a better leader. What I'm having to jump through a few more hoops to do is how does the entrepreneurial mindset in turn help the family and marriage therapy piece?
Perfect. So I'm going to reverse engineer a question by maybe giving your audience a little something meaty to chew on. So you started off the question with, I feel.
Okay.
Right. So an I feel statement is embedded and loaded with beliefs, assumptions, and expectations, right? So, which is really just our programming, our data set that we're looking at our worldview or our emotional reality through. So I love just hearing when someone says that, just to say, well, right, the I feel usually leads you to that, right? It's a set of judgments, set of not good, bad, or anything. It's just informs me. So while we're talking, and I'm just letting people hear how I would think and how I would proceed with something like that. But at the end of the day, answering the entrepreneurial question, I do believe that entrepreneurship is a pathway to personal development that many people have no clue is there. So when you truly look at, you know, forget this idea of, you know, entrepreneurship and business ownership and doing anything like that is purely about capitalism. It could be. But it can also be an incredible pathway to self-reflection. It could be a personal pathway to challenge all of your beliefs, assumptions, and expectations about building something, about legacy, about impact, about how I want to divide my time. What's my personal brand, aka my core values? Does that align with the business or the company that I want to join or a job that I want to get? You know, it's interesting to see that where, you know, people will go, you know, someone I know back in the day was dating someone and they're a vegetarian and their partner was working at Burger King corporate. And, you know, I asked that, I'm like, you know, are you okay with the fact that this person might be going out there and promoting a certain food lifestyle that may or may not be as healthy as the one you're trying to promote in your home? Does that bother you in any way, shape, or form? And the person didn't even think off the top of their head that that would be a contradiction, because a lot of times we're not that connected to seeing these things through our lens of our core values. And that's where I think that entrepreneurship really does tie that in as a personal development, personal growth modality.
I think you hit a very important nail on the head. And one of the things that I'm already thrilled about is hopefully with this show, we're tying in unexpected connections, or we're connecting dots that people normally wouldn't see. And you're already going so far down that path. So I do love looking at entrepreneurship as a personal development path. Yeah, I certainly can't speak for you, but I didn't spend my life saying one day I'm going to own a business, or one day I'm going to write a book, or one day I'm going to have a podcast. No, all those things just sort of kind of happened. Like I got to a point where they were the last remaining good decision. So, you know, here we are. Certainly I did them willingly, but other factors had to come in. So there has absolutely been a lot of personal development through that, but separating it from that capitalistic approach, if you will, if that's proper English, into the personal development. I think that's a great way to look at it. And it is funny when you call out the I feel. I was essentially talking about my assumptions and judgments. Like from my perspective, it's easier to connect the therapy to the entrepreneurship than it is the entrepreneurship to the therapy. So you're right. Like the way you described it in a case study of at least one in this conversation, that's how you interpreted it was correct. And I think it's awesome that you gave us that window into how you process it and then turn around and come back. So as we jump back and forth between families and business, which we'll continue to do that throughout the whole conversation, I've got to stop and ask before I forget to. As much as I would love to look myself in the mirror and say that I am the perfect husband and father and family man, and I balance it all great, and my family's completely happy, and it's all because of me, none of those things can be true. Maybe some days, but none of those things can be true. So as you have worked with individuals and families, because I know it's not limited just to marriage and things talked about, what are some of the core characteristics that you see in people who do have healthier and stronger family units.
Yeah, I can't remember who said this, and it could be from, you know, the good to great, you know, was it Jim Collins, I believe, wrote that. But someone in that world said, you know, all healthy businesses do the same things, and all unhealthy businesses do the same things. And I apply that the same thing to people and to couples and families. All healthy families and all healthy couples do the same things, and all unhealthy couples do the same things. And I would be remiss if I wouldn't share that Rick Sapio, who is my business coach and mentor, who unfortunately just passed away a few months ago, really would talk about, at the end of the day, the person who is willing to do this work, especially through the lens of entrepreneurship. And this is where I get a lot of this from. He looks at everything as entrepreneurship is truly about full accountability, that you take full accountability for every single outcome in your life. And if you're not willing to do that, you're going to have a lot of chaos. You're going to have a lot of conflict. And I think that that's one of the things that I see, that even when I'm pre-qualifying to work with someone, I listen to the story they share with me about why they're coming to therapy or why they want coaching, and how much of it do they say, this is on me, I know I need to do this work, versus someone's twisting my arm in order to come in here, which is more likely for me to be a no, I'm really sorry, I'm probably not the right fit for you, or you're not the right fit for me yet. In that regards of, where do you take that stock on, well, that victim, or it's their fault, or I'm here because this person's doing this to me, right? And it reminds me, I love telling this story in context where there was, remember Frasier, right? Right. So Frasier's dad, there was one great episode where Frasier's dad, who was the old crotchety, you know, guy, started dating someone, and Frasier started talking about it on his radio show. And the woman broke up with him because she heard him talking about their intimate things. And Frasier's dad comes, you know, yelling at him when he gets home from work that day. And he goes, Frasier, don't you know that a man's intimacy is very personal? It's between you and the person that you're doing it to. And I think we take this perspective, like walking through the world, that person did this to me, versus what was it about what I didn't see, what I didn't choose to see, what I haven't done the work yet to allow myself to see, that allow me to get into that entanglement or that engagement in the first place.
Man, I love that. And honestly, three quotes in a row, who's willing to do the work, taking the full accountability for the outcomes. But the what didn't I see question, I think, is so important. And they're really, I love your thoughts on this. I guess there's a dangerous quicksand trap in there, right? Because if I'm constantly just like, well, what didn't I see? It's all my fault. I'm a failure. I'm terrible. We don't want to sink down. But at the same time, in many ways, the only way that I can improve, listen to me talk, in many ways, the only way, I'm terrible, whatever, I didn't see that coming, is if I stop and say, well, what did I miss? Like, what didn't I see? And sometimes there just wasn't any way to anticipate it. There wasn't any way to see it. Like, every once in a while, something comes from so far out of left field. Okay, that just happened.
Of course.
But often there were warning signs. There were opportunities. There were clues. But because of what we wanted to see, what we wanted to hear, what we already made up our mind would happen, we missed them. And then we end up at a suboptimal outcome. Maybe it's a failed business agreement. Maybe it's a failed relationship. Maybe it's just an argument that could have otherwise been avoided, or money that didn't need to get spent.
Correct.
But that's such a good point of reflecting on what didn't I see or what did I miss, and being honest and vulnerable enough with ourselves to have that conversation. That's fantastic.
Yeah. And I think that, like, you're spot on with what you're saying, as far as, like, there doesn't need to be a reason to extra beat up yourself. Like, that's not what we're looking for. That's not the purpose of the lens that I'm trying to share. Those of us out there who are listening to this, who do have that self, you know, that really brutal self-talk, right? That's something to go figure out. Like, where is that coming from? And is that even my voice? Who did I inherit that from? And where did I inherit that from, right? A lot of times it's family of origin stuff, right? It's a parent or a grandparent in that regards. And I would challenge you to find another way to honor and show them love instead of having to do it that way, right? So I think that's a big thing. One of the ways that, you know, I want to give everybody a really tangible and practical perspective in order to see what those triggers are, what those belief systems might be, is for the last 2.5 years, I've been using the Enneagram personality testing as a way to look into that. Like, what's your triggers? What are you trying to really lean into? What are some of the ways that you can grow as a human being that's specific to your personality? And it comes in a very non-pathology, non-diagnosis lens. It just really gives a very empowering and clean perspective. So just as an example, like, there's certain types that will really be this black and white, all or nothing. It's much more rational than emotional. So therefore, there's always going to be that thing that they're looking for that they're always missing, kind of like going to the fridge in the middle of the night and thinking that, you know, it's in the fridge when it's really in the cupboard, right? And they still can't find it when they go to the cupboard, but they're going to do that to themselves. And then there's the other person who's like, well, if only I do more research on something and I become the expert at this, I won't be proven wrong and people will see I have value, right? So we all have these predisposed lenses that we don't realize are there. So any opportunity to use any of these tools out there to help us get there is not one size fits all. And in this lens, there's 9 different variations. So I would definitely challenge people, and we can throw some links into some assessments that are out there that are good and useful. But I think that's, you know, like you said, it's not about beating yourself up. It's that accountability is, oh, okay, now I know, right? In a way, it's, don't get stuck in the overthinking, but give yourself the opportunity to try something different. However, this is the one big caveat. If your beliefs, assumptions, and expectations haven't changed, you're still coming from the same root stuckness. So therefore, any attempt from that place, even if you're going in a full 360 circle, will still come from those same expectations that will get you stuck, which I think is what Einstein's theory, right? Don't solve a problem. You know, you can't create a solution from the problem that created it in the first place.
Yeah.
And that's really what we're talking about.
Yeah. And so again, so much of what you're talking about ties into family and business. And I had probably 4 or 5 things that I wanted to call out and questions that I wanted to ask, but then you had to bring up overthinking.
Yeah.
And I might be asking for a friend, but I know a guy who can overthink some stuff. So I do agree with you that there should be a thick line between self-reflection. What do I miss? How do I improve? And wallowing in a bottle of Jim Beam until my life just is a wreck because I can't succeed at anything. So getting those far edges of the spectrum away, asking for a friend, how do you help people deal with overthinking?
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say I would first go into figuring out what someone's fight or flight response is. There's 4 responses there, right? We have fight, flight, fleeing. And the 4th one is fawning, which is a little known category. And those are the 4 main, right? And everybody knows the fight or flight. And then the fleeing is, you know, just really avoiding and stuff like that. But the fawning is a new one that I actually got out of one of my friends in the chiropractic world when they're seeing how the body does respond to trauma and triggers. And the fawning is pleasing to appease. It's just really being that agreeable, yes, I'll do this. You know, in a lot of ways, it could be that codependent or that helper, or, you know, keeping inserting yourself into situations so you can find a way to be useful, or that person will find favor in your eyes, as they would say. But, you know, there are some good assessments out there, and we can throw that into the notes that I give my clients that will help a person figure that out. But the overthinking, you know, we have to look at it through, you know, how does it make sense? But also, how does that process protect you, right? I don't want to use the word maladaptive because I don't think really at the day anything is really maladaptive. I think everything has become an unconscious or even conscious way to protect you from getting hurt even more in some way, shape, or form, right? So I know that I have a personal, you know, in a lot of ways, I'll sometimes freeze. And I know that when I'm overwhelmed, sometimes I just won't want to go out and be as social as I want. I know that music helps me get there, especially reggae music. I have a going theory that you can't play reggae music and stay depressed. I think that's virtually impossible. So
I'd be willing to test that there. I think,
right. So I really do. And I've seen some research on that, and I wrote a blog article about that recently, but the overthinkers, we can call it anxiety. You can call it, you know, a subset of triggers and traumas, but really I think everything is a tool and everything is a learning lesson. And I would start maybe externalizing it instead of being like, oh, I have this thing that's bothering me. you know, one of the tricks in the family therapy world and the models is how do you externalize it and start having a conversation? What would you give that thing a nickname? Right. What would you give? What would you call your overthinking? So I'm wondering what your friend might call their overthinking if they were to give it a name.
You should probably come up with a name.
Right. We should let them know that.
I'll pass the word along. You have my
make sure.
My
make commitment. Sure. Well, your friend should be listening to your podcast if he's, you know, so if he's that good of a friend, right?
I'm pretty sure he's been here for everyone.
So what would you give that name? What would you give it as a nickname? And then start having conversations with it. Ask it those questions. Hey, what are you here to teach me? What do I need to learn from you in order to move on? And so you can move on and start teaching someone else those lessons, right? Years ago, before I started going down the rabbit hole of integrative medicine, I had major panic attacks, like full blown. And, you know, I know what they were in relationship to, but I don't know why they were that intense. Like, and I don't wish panic attacks upon anybody. And I remember sitting in an old apartment I was living in with the terracotta floors that were, you know, these Mexican style tiles, and just sitting on the floor and literally having a conversation with the panic attacks. And between that and then finding this modality, neuroemotional technique, and there's practitioners all over the world who are certified in this, that was the 1-2 punch where I started taking it outside of me and having it and putting it on the chair or putting it on the floor and saying, hey, what's up? We got to talk because we're living together right now. And you're clearly here for a reason, which means you'll also go away when I figure out that reason.
Man, I like that. I like that a lot. And you said two things in there. I mean, so much of it was great, but the two things I managed to write down and still listen to you were, what is this protecting me from? Or how is it protecting me? However you phrase it, I don't want to misquote you live on air. But then also, what are you here to teach me? So just a couple of weeks ago, I had a conversation with Gary Hurst. He's an improv comedian. He's amazing. And he talked about, you know, everything that happens in front of you is like what they would call an offer. So I can choose to react however I want. I can deal however I want. Like, that's the offer. How do I take it? What do I do? And part of his story is, I tell his story again, it's not mine to tell, is he had bad nightmares when he was a kid, but he would wake up and his dad would sit with him and he would draw the monsters. And then after a while, his dad was like, you know, you can erase the monsters. If you draw them, you can erase them. And that was kind of how he started getting control over his fears and his nightmares. And it's a much longer story, but it's an awesome story to hear. And so now, basically, within a couple of weeks of each other, I'm hearing the same thing from a slightly different perspective. It's like, okay, how is this overthinking process or whatever I'm dealing with? If it is part of my expectations, if it's, so for me, I've always said, always, not clear, I haven't always said it, but for a long time, that our expectations serve as our first filter. So everything we see, Everything we experience goes through our expectations. And that is how we give it a narrative and we react to it and give it power, meaning, whatever. So if I have these biases, assumptions, expectations, how are they protecting me? And then when things start to happen, asking, you know, okay, what is that teaching you? And that's something that I try to do with my son. But even hearing you say it, I can think of different ways to do it when he gets afraid of things. And he might be a little bit too young for it to really work yet. Mm-hmm. But if we can create those mental models over time.
Well, it reminded me of a great story, and I can't remember. So there's, in the field of marriage and family therapy, there's different modalities, right? Different approaches that are all, you know, relative to each other, but they have like the different schools of thought within that. And one of them is called narrative therapy. And it was so powerful and it was so beautiful. And I can't remember exactly which one of the two creators of it, David Epson or Michael White, there was a classic example of a little kid who was having nightmares. And so the therapist, whichever one it was, and I know that I'm going to get crap from some of my colleagues for not remembering which, but they were both incredible human beings who have done so much wonderful work, that he asked the little boy at night to go get get a shoebox, but I want you, instead of to try to like get rid of it, see if you can capture it, but I want you to bring it with you to the therapy office. And, you know, being as creative as possible with this little kid. And somehow this little kid conjured up the strength and, you know, captured the imaginary ghost or, you know, monster under the bed and brought it into the office. And the therapist asked to hold the box that he brought in. And he was like, can I peek into it to see? And he peeked into the box. And the therapist, on purpose, tipped his chair backwards. Right, fell out of the chair, let the box open up, and he goes, oh my gosh, I need your help to get it back in the box. And the kid's like, I got it. And he went and he's like, I got it. And I put it back in the box and there it is. And now you're safe. That was the last time the kid ever had a monster fear. Because he transformed this whole perspective into, it's not just about me. I can protect other people. I can do this for even for adults. And he became the monster hunter. And his fear, awesome. Right? And all these fears went away because we're changing the relationship to the belief about the problem, right? And 99% of the time, and this is why I love linguistics and language, that, right, the problem is never the problem. It's the beliefs about the problem. And how do we figure that out? What are the words? What are the stories that people use to describe it? That's where I lean into the work. And I playfully will say, even though I obviously care about the problem in quotes, but 99% of the time, that's not what actually needs to be solved. That's just informing me of their worldview, informing of how that got created in the first place. And I'm sure you've seen this in your things of like, you know, I'd like to get back to, you know, someone you're working with or, you know, or even in your own world, like, oh, well, we'd like to get back to where we were before the problem started. And I'll say to them, no, you don't. Because if you do, you're still carrying those same things that will get you back to where you are now. So I want to figure out what that was that helped, that got you there even in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's similar statements along that, but yeah, I hear somebody say, wait, you're trying to repeat the problem. You want to do a bunch of work to put you right back to the same situation that would just cause the same problem. Hold on. Let me clear my brain and we'll start over. But I love how you talk about the well, first, that monster story was fantastic. So thank you for that. And I've got something that I was going to ask, but I'll come back to that after this because you talked about linguistics. So for me, and then when we talked on your show, there were multiple times where I was like, wait a minute, you see and look for and do the same things that I do, but for different mm-hmm. reasons coming from different angles. So like when I would do investigations back in the day, we've got fraud and we don't know who did it. And we're just kind of doing the initial interviews to narrow the scope of the investigation and clear the people who obviously didn't and kind of that pre-work stuff. If we're just talking to somebody who maybe has a new role or their responsibilities changed and they say, well, I was excited or I was looking for it or I asked for it or, you know, I was promoted or I was chosen. Cool. But if they say, well, it was given to me or it was taken from me or I was told to or it wasn't my choice. So, you know, somebody listening from the outside might say, well, that's all the same thing. No, like psychologically, that is super different. And for the record, that doesn't mean that somebody who was told to stole, but it means that they could be much less happier in their situation, therefore feeling entitled to make something right. So amongst another giant pile of alert signals could make that person a little bit more likely to be the one who committed the fraud than somebody else. Not that factor yeah. in and of itself. So when you are having, it could go either way, therapy conversations or business coaching conversations, which we could argue they're the same thing anyway. But yeah. in those conversations, linguistically, and I know person to person, case to case is different, but are there groups of words or statements that you listen for as alert signals to the problem behind the problem?
That's a great question. I don't know if I've compiled, you know, common denominators to that level. I mean, you know, I guess I could say it's, what was that line back in the day about politics and pornography? You know it when you see it type of thing, right? So I kind of feel that same way at this point in my career. You know, I was on an intake call with a referral this morning, and they just kept getting into the story and getting into the story. And I had to say to them, listen, when we're going to get together, I'm going to interrupt you a lot. Because for me, the story doesn't matter. Because once I get into this, you know, the integrative medicine side of things with my neuroemotional technique, what really matters is how is your nervous system responding to your story that isn't serving you. I'm not here to tell you what's true or false, lie, not lie, right? Any of those. That's not the world I play in. I just want to know, are you in alignment and able to be as proactive with as many proactive choices and options in front of you? Or is your nervous system and your rational brain not firing together and therefore creating contradictory experiences where you can't be strategic, which is also keeping you in fight or flight? So I, you know, on the simplest level, yes, there are statements, sure. right? And, you know, again, like, you know, the I feel statement is a great mm-hmm. one. You know, when people are stuck in like so many different variations of a story or there's common denominators in a story throughout life, then you have themes. And I'll typically find 4 to 5 themes that a person is constantly wrapping themselves in that's keeping them stuck. And they may describe it in certain ways, but like at the end of the day, that narrative is supported with a script. And that script will only have certain amount of variables. And if it keeps coming back to the same overarching themes or topics, then that's where it's informing me about a person's belief system and the narrative and the stories that are going to go along with that. So they can tell me 43 other ones, but I don't need to know that because I already know the outcome is going to be the same.
Sure. You start picking up on patterns, trends, and then you can get that lowest common denominator or denominators to piss off all the math people listening and just address those. So let's flip the question to the opposite side. Instead of necessarily listening for alert signals, from your experience, again, in the family therapy and in the business coaching world, what are some of the indications you get where you feel like people are now open and ready for a potential breakthrough moment?
Yeah, I think the first thing, again, is that self-awareness. And again, that's a cliche word. That's kind of like the yogi word of the year, right? Self-aware and personal development. And, you know, I listen to all these podcasts and, you know, whatever it might be. I think the difference is people, we can hear all these things. And there's such an abundance of wonderful YouTube videos and podcasts and books. And you're right, we shout out to Brené Brown. And, you know, everybody's now in the Mel Robbins kick. And, you know, that's, you know, the let them thing, right? I want to help people separate phrases and like cool ideas from actually letting it embed into your worldview. And I think that's the difference between like a touch and go intervention, right? The TikTokification of what's going on in our world, right? Everybody's a narcissist and everybody's this and everybody's that. Listen, we all have these tendencies and on one side, and the other side is, well, I don't want to be seen as selfish. So therefore, I will do X, Y, and Z to not appear that way. But we all get stuck in our own patterns, even though we think we're doing something good or we're trying to be better for the world and our people in our lives, or even more so for ourselves. So I want to have people just kind of like, think about what's the like, what is it that you think that you're looking to solve? What is it that you think like, gosh, this is the thing that keeps happening to me over and over again that, you know, I'm kind of reading or listening to podcasts or I'm Googling, you know, for episodes on these type of things. And how are you showing up in those situations? So when someone says to me, listen, I'm willing to take full accountability, I realize that, yes, there might be problematic situations in my life around me, whether it's work or my relationship. And obviously everybody has to do their work, but I want to do it regardless of the outcome, regardless of if work gets better or not, regardless if my partner goes to therapy or not and we do couples counseling or not, regardless if my kid does better at school or gives me less lip at home and does more chores and responsibilities, I want to know more and do better. I think that's a great way of starting, where their outcome isn't dependent on someone else having to do the work.
Which circles back to what you said earlier, people who are willing to take the accountability, do the work, ask themselves, what do I miss? And it comes back full circle. Yeah. When we were talking before we went live, you mentioned three concepts that are very important to you and they work together in all the work that you do. I would be grateful if you could walk us through how and why they're important. Because I think this kind of goes back to that through thread conversation that we started like a half an hour ago. And then you took me away from, I will not take accountability from leading us away from that conversation. But what are those three things and how, why are they so important for everything that you do?
Yeah. So everything that I go back to is through this lens of simplicity, probability, and leverage. And that's something I borrowed / stole from Rick. And we do make our lives way more complicated. Even in the storytelling, like we've just been talking about how we get stuck in challenges and situations and relationships, that we tend to make things way more complex. And the steps that I help my clients walk through does come again, come from this entrepreneurship lens, is what are your core values, right? Most people can say like, oh, well, being kind, or there's this great video that years ago was a Match.com commercial. And this woman's on the street and the guy's interviewing her. What are you looking for in a relationship? And her response is like, I don't know, someone nice, funny and kind, right? As if that's like the top threshold. And I'm like, well, shouldn't that just be like a baseline doorman for anybody that you want to be in your life? And you're saying, well, that's what I'm looking for dating, right? So like, I feel like we may think we know our core values, but we don't necessarily know how to clarify them, but also how to utilize them or deploy them right? Would be a better way of saying it. So I think like starting off with people's core values is step one. Also knowing what your anti-values are. So what I would say is, you know, a person or a business or who you're investing in or who you want to work with company-wise, X, Y, and Z, can have all these wonderful things. But if there's an anti-value there that has nothing to do with the core values, even if one shows up, you could, I'm not saying you should, but you should strongly consider making that a hell no. And for that situation, it could be, you know, where they, you know, I might have a certain personality that doesn't do well with X, Y, and Z. Let's say someone who's been in recovery. Not that it's a judgment on someone who's recovery. In fact, I have massive awe for people who've gone through recovery. But some people may not do well with their own anxieties and project that onto their partner about, well, if I drink and whims, if I enjoy too much and what's that going to be like for our lifestyle at home and all the work rate, if that's going to trigger you way too much, then do yourself a favor. Don't go there. Make that a no. It's not, doesn't mean you're a bad person and they're a bad person. It just means what's healthiest for me. And I think that that's the ultimate question. This is not about good or bad. This is not about right or wrong. I'm not here as a therapist and entrepreneur coach and integrated medicine practitioner to help you, you know, say, well, this is good, this is bad. I'm here to only help you figure out, is this the ultimate level of health I can get to? Is this the most healthy for me? So that lens of core values, that lens of simplicity, probability, and leverage. Am I making my life simpler by doing this? Is my outcome and goals that I want, which I want to challenge people to get really clean on those things, the outcome, is it probable? And the leverage part is, who am I bringing into my life to help me achieve that? Therapist, coach, mentor, team of advisors, your Avengers, if you will, right? One of my favorite stories with that is I had a client who we would share the same round robin of podcast interests. So one time this person came in with a major challenge and I'm like, I'm going to shut up and we're going to call in all of the podcasters that you've been listening to. And I knew enough about what they would say. So, you know, let's say it was like Tony Robbins and Brene Brown and, you know, someone in the entrepreneurship and business world and Gary Vaynerchuk, Gary V. I said, okay, ask your question to them. What would each of them say back to you? And verbatim, in their style, this client gave back the guidance or advice as if they were in the room. And he's like, oh, I know what to do now. I didn't have to say crap. Like, the one thing that I want people to hear is you already have so much wisdom in you. When you get out of your own way, the answer is there. So this idea of simplicity on the far side of complexity, which is, if you go look up Oliver Wendell Holmes, the quote on simplicity, but it's a very long thing. But in other words, that's what I'm truly trying to drive home, is always live on simplicity on the far side of complexity and figure out how you're making your life way more complex than it needs to be.
And stop giving me so many things to write down while I'm trying to listen.
I'm making it way more complex for you than I should be.
You are. No, but in what I was just trying to write down as you were finishing that up is the simplicity on the other side of complexity. And I love the visual of that other side of complexity. We can get there. Like, we're all going to bump into complexity, whether we create it ourselves or someone else creates it for us. It's going to happen. But the simplicity is on the other side. So to try to just make sure I can distill it down. Simplicity, focus on our core values, narrow down what we're doing, get really clear about that. I'm going to come back to that in just a second. Probability, that's more of just kind of an assessment of, is what I'm saying, is what I'm doing, or the decisions I'm making, are they making the goals I want to achieve more probable? If they are, yes. If they're not, hell no, we need to make better decisions. And then I like that leverage concept. Who else am I bringing into my life? Who or what else am I bringing into my life to make these outcomes more probable and to assist with the simplicity? I like that a lot. So assuming I got that right-ish, when we get back to the simplicity piece, you said something that I think is important. I think it's true for businesses, and I think it's true for people as well. And honestly, I've been guilty of this. We say we know what our core values are, but if you put a gun to my head and I had to say them like in a crystal clear, concise, meaningful manner, could I do that before you lost patience and pulled the trigger? I hope I don't have to find out. So how do you help people really clarify both their core values and their anti-values?
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm going to give a shout out again you know, as I'm still reflecting and writing down lessons of Rick after, you know, his passing. He actually wrote a book with Dr. Ivan Meisner, who's the founder of BNI, called Who's in Your Room? And I think that's such an incredible way to start that. Get the book, go to the audio, whatever it might be. But sometimes it's on sale for as cheap as like $9. But I would highly recommend that book as a game changer for just starting to reorient. He talks about the doorman principle, you know, as if your life has a bouncer and these core values are your bouncer. And it's a lot easier to say no up front than it is to not be clear, let things and people into your life, let food into your house, right? Invest in certain companies, whatever it might be, but that if all of our lives are revolved around this doorman principle, which are our core values in different topics of our life, then you're going to have a much cleaner, much healthier life in that regards. So I would say, you know, just as a shout out to that is this is a great way to start. It's simple. It's a fun read. It's great stories. There's a worksheet in there. You can start whittling it down, right? I have it on my homepage of my practice. Like if you scroll down to my practice's homepage, it's right there on the bottom and explains exactly how I embed my business's core values of compassion, enthusiasm, growth / self-awareness, and authenticity, with a definition of what each of those means. So it's not just like what I'm trying to give to you. It's what I'm hoping that you're going to, right? It's a reciprocal process. I want to show up this way. I want you to hold me accountable to showing up that way for you. And I give my clients permission to call me out and reflexively what I'm going to hold you accountable to. And if you don't want that, if you don't believe in these things, mind, body, integrative medicine, personal growth and development. If you're not listening to podcasts, if you're not watching YouTube videos, if you're not, however you're a learner, right? If you're not, if that's not you, I'm not going to be the right practitioner for you to partner with. And you're not going to be the right client for me. So that's
like a doorman. Like I said, however you're a learner, right? Because everybody's going to learn different, but as long as you're out there learning. And I also like that idea of, yes, they're your values, but you're also putting them out there because it's what you expect people to give back, which can go back to the age-old principle of leading by example in almost an unstated way. So I could tell you what I expect from you and then point out all the times you don't deliver on that, as if being your dad is actually going to be helpful in this situation. Or I can lead by example by, here I am losing my words again. I was going to say being emblematic of, but I know that's improper English. We're going to run with it anyway. But if I demonstrate these values consistently, then you've got two choices. Either line up and show them back, which is how rapport-based relationships typically progress, or you can self-select not to, which then is likely also going to show the unwillingness to learn and grow and adapt and take accountability and so forth.
Correct. And I'll even take it another level is, you know, if one shares, right, any of the listeners, if you share that which you believe, and it's not that you shouldn't have people who have different beliefs in your life, right? And I think there's a difference between having different beliefs and different core values. And just because someone voted differently than you doesn't mean they have different values underneath it all. And I think that's a whole nother conversation we can have, because I love surrounding myself with people who think differently, believe differently than me, and so forth. If they're able to have conversations where it's not about being antagonistic and I'm right, you're wrong type of thing. And, you know, there, people like that exist still. I think majority of them, you know, I think majority of the world can still be that way when poked and probed. But I think that when you say, this is what my practice or my career or my identity is professionally, this is why I believe it. These are the outcomes that one would have when you align yourself with these beliefs and the approaches of these beliefs. If you believe in that too, we should partner together. So think about this as, you know, again, that doorman, but also as a pre-qualification for people who could be in your life, who should be in your life, and who shouldn't be in your life. Again, if you want to do it on a social level, if you want to do it on a romantic level, if you want to do it on a career, business, you know, employer, employee dynamic, if you want to look at it as where you're investing your money, whether it's food, products, investments, and so forth, this applies at all those levels. Like, and again, it could be a Venn diagram, like, you know, it could be 80%, 90%. And then I would say, well, that's where the anti-values come in. As long as it doesn't have any of your anti-values, right? And enough of the core values overlap, they don't have to be exactly, you know, the same. They could be synonyms. Mm-hmm. But I think what an amazing tool that if we started engaging our day-to-day through that, how much chaos and craziness would be cleaned up.
It's a great point. And as you've seen as well, there are too many times where we either create the chaos or let the chaos in and then blame it on outside factors. Because also that's how our brains work. It's uncomfortable to take the responsibility. It's easier. It's more comfortable to blame it on other things. So I'm not judging anybody. And I've probably been guilty of it in the last 3 or 4 days if I think enough about it. We were talking earlier, we've got a new puppy. So I can blame the disruption on the new puppy or the guy who found it, set up the meeting, put it in his truck and drove it home.
Like, you should talk to that friend about that,
we're noticing a theme with this friend of mine here.
Common denominators here, right? But that's what
at the notes I've taken. He's got a lot to implement.
We all do. And I think that's like, going back and making it like playful and joyful. We lose out on this. One of the things I try to really put ahead of everything else is I also ask people, do you want this process to be fun? We're going to get into some serious topics. You're going to cry. I'm going to cry with you sometimes. But do I have your permission to make this as fun as possible? Which is something that you're not typically going to ever hear from a therapist, right? It's meat and potatoes and it's intensity. And we're going to, it's going to be a lot of fighting in the sessions or fighting at home. Okay. But can we make it fun? And that starts shifting the neurology on a deeper level. Wait. So I can fight with my spouse, but then we can laugh about it later and we can joke about it and we can deal with it. Because I'd rather you solve a problem from a better feeling place than from a really crappy feeling place. And, if people were listening to this, if you're listening to this right now, never solve a problem from a place that feels like crap. Do anything in a healthy way, obviously, that makes you feel better first. And then after you have momentum in that space, then go back and try to solve the challenge. But never do it from a place that feels like crap.
Which probably means try not to do it right away. In many cases, take a deep breath, create some time and space. I feel like sometimes when we react with our full emotional response, then we react to satisfy that emotional response, not to achieve the better, longer term outcome. So letting that emotional response wash over, we always have the time and opportunity to do it. Don't get me wrong. But when we do, if we can create a little bit of time and space, let that emotional response wash over, go do something a little bit more, listen to a reggae song, take a walk, pet the dog, whatever, then come back. You got a better chance of being successful.
Yeah. So last year I had Ryan Serhant from Netflix and Bravo's Million Dollar Listing on my show. And, talk about a person who's had a journey, right? And, if anybody who's ever watched him, the first years of his show, you're like, this is a pretentious, self-serving. The man has had this wonderful journey. I have such respect for Ryan and everything he's doing. And he shared with me that what he does is when he has a bad day or an issue comes up or he has a fight with his wife or he disappoints himself or, this just crappy thing happened. He says, I put it on my calendar for 30 days out as a reminder. And when it pops up on my calendar, most of the time, like, what is that thing? What is that? Like, it doesn't even we really think in the moment, oh my God, this thing is so huge. This bad thing is so catastrophic. My life is over. My business is going to shut down. My marriage is over, but whatever it is, right? Catastrophic. But 99% of the time, right, we're such resilient beings by default that what we think and what we believe about this nervous system, physiological fight or flight trigger that we're going through right now will start to diminish naturally, because that's what we have humans are. I mean, we wouldn't have been around for thousands and thousands of years if that didn't happen. We'd have created amazing societies and constantly evolution. We're programmed to be resilient. So I would challenge anybody to do that, what Ryan tried is put it on the calendar a month from now. If something bad happens today, put it on your calendar and see if you even remember, but also notice the intensity being far less. Now, if it's still there and it's still triggering you every single day, that's when you got to reach out to someone professionally to work with and partner with to kind of work on that stuff and see, is this a theme? Also, is there something going on that's a common denominator between this thing and other things that are still bothering me?
And from the outside looking in, I feel like that theme and that pattern development is, or pattern recognition, I should say, is so critical. If I can recognize my own patterns, themes in my reactions, my decisions, my communications, I can keep the ones that are hopefully good and move on or adjust or adapt the ones that are counterproductive, that they're keeping me in a negative space, that aren't allowing me to move on, develop all the things that you've been talking about today. You have packed so many great ideas and given me so much to think about and to bring home to my dinner table and to have a conversation about. So I'd love to ask you, where can people go to connect with you, to learn more from you, to learn more about what you teach and how you do it? You've got your podcast, Promote Away, man. Where do people go to meet you?
Yeah, I mean, the easiest way is the podcast, and it's called the You Winning Life podcast. It's on all platforms. You can find it on YouTube if you're an audio visual person. That's the easiest way. My Instagram is Jason Wasser, LMFT, and WASSER is the last name. It's all one word. Google. Yeah, I'm pretty easily found with between all the social media platforms and the podcasts and stuff like that. But if there's, you know, if you're looking for, I'm licensed in multiple states for therapy. So if you're anywhere in North America and certain countries don't, if you're out of the country and you're looking for a therapist, then it depends on the regulations and laws. But if you're entrepreneurial, you're either a family business. I work a lot with family businesses. I came out of a third generation family business that I decided not to work in. That's a whole nother conversation. But, you know, if you're a family business entrepreneur, you're an entrepreneur working in a business or working in someone else's business, and you want to figure out how to leverage your expertise and be more impactful, stuff like that. Those are all the things that I work with from the side of coaching as well. So
awesome, man. And I got all your websites and podcast links already. So I'll make sure to include those in the show notes so people don't have to go hunting for them and they can just find them. Man, I really appreciate this. Getting to have two conversations with you in relative short order. I really appreciate how, and this is going to sound selfish and biased, but our perspectives overlap from unexpected ways. Like, not entirely, like you mentioned the Venn diagram, but they do in certain ways. And I'm always fascinated by people who can take seemingly disparate concepts or contexts and find common threads to weave them together and help themselves and others be successful. And that's what you do every day. So thank you for giving us even just a small window into what you know and what you do and how you help others. I really appreciate it.
My absolute pleasure. And I really want to give a shout out to you because these are the topics that we're discussing, that you're discussing, are essential in today's day and age, right? How to listen better, how to connect with people through curiosity and engagement, where, like I said a few minutes ago, I still believe that there's a lot of hope left in humanity. We just have to clear out the clutter and the noise, but we have to up our skills to do that. And I know that's what your podcast is focusing on and really getting there. So Shout out to you on that.
Well, I appreciate it, man. We're trying. People have to have the motivation to get there, just like coming to see you, right? They got to have the motivation to get there, but that's what we're trying to do. And I really appreciate you being a part of that, man. Thank you so much.
Right back at you. Thank you.
Cool. Let's talk again soon, dude.
Hope so.
All right. Be safe. Thank you. Jason, thank you for another great conversation. It was great to see you. I'm glad we could pick up where we left off, flip the coin a little bit on the conversation, but I really appreciate all that you shared and all that you opened our eyes to as part of your conversation. You made so many great points. I love how you talked about taking full accountability for our outcomes. Maybe it's not our fault, but we've got to take full accountability for our outcomes. I really like that. I also love getting into the mindset of, what are you here to teach me? Man, I thought that was great. And maybe, and I'm bald man splitting hairs here, but maybe the most important point you might have made in that whole conversation was how critical it is to separate different beliefs from different core values. Just because people believe different things than we do doesn't mean they have different core values than we have. And that was a tremendous point that should not be overlooked. So thank you so much for all you shared today. And thank you to everybody who took the time to listen to the conversation. We appreciate you being here. Thank you for listening. Hopefully you took notes, and hopefully now you're approaching some of your conversations personally and professionally with a little bit different perspective after listening to all that Jason had to share. Thank you so much for being here for another week. Again, we'd be grateful if you took a quick moment to like the show, share the show, subscribe to it, leave us a rating, share us your feedback. We would love to hear from you. Thank you. And while you're online, please check out our sponsors. Head over to humantel.com. and enter the code INCLUSIVE25 for 25% off their best-in-class online training. If you've ever thought about developing the skill set to recognize what people are likely thinking and feeling at any moment in time, by recognizing shifts in their facial expression as a nonverbal communication, humantel.com is the place to go. I highly recommend it. For the professional interviewers, head over to certifiedinterviewer.com. That's where you can get all your questions answered about the International Association of Interviewers, as well as the Certified Forensic Interviewer designation. And while you're online, please check out inquasive.com. That's where you can learn more about the programs our clients ask us to customize for their senior leaders, business development teams, HR teams, and more, to teach them how to encourage people to share sensitive information under vulnerable circumstances in the face of consequences. Thank you all for being here for another week. We truly appreciate it. Please stay safe. Take care of each other. See you next time.